Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door.
When I'm working, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home, I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's growing older than you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be a man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door.
I'm lonely, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you.
Proclaimers, I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles, first released as the lead single from their second studio album, Sunshine on Leith, and that was in August 1988 in the UK on the Chrysalis record label, and it went to number 11 in the UK singles chart, and when it was re-released in 1990, it shot to number one in Iceland, New Zealand and Australia, mate.
Does it ever... The sun ever shine in Leith?
I've not been, I don't
think. This is the question. Well, I've been through it. I've never actually stopped off in Leith, but of course that's where they're from as well.
North of Edinburgh, isn't it?
Yeah, brothers Craig and Charlie Reed. I saw them live.
Did you? Where?
You did as well, didn't you? At the Ramsbottom Festival.
Did they play that?
They certainly did.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, yeah. So we were playing there. We were playing at Ramsbottom Festival. I think it's called the Over the Hills Festival now, but we were playing
there.
Yeah. And they did a gig there, and I'm pretty sure that we saw them.
Well, we did, but I saw them at the Big Chill. No, it was the Green Man Festival.
The Green Man.
They were the last band on the Sunday night, and it was that's all I remember is just everyone jumping up and down as if they got ants in their pants. It was just Pogo City. Everyone, the whole of the field erupted.
Well, the thing is now is that we're going to be singing this for 2 weeks because it's like Amarillo. And what happens is as soon as you hear it comes in your head, you'll be singing, I will, and it's just the way to Amarillo. And that's the other one.
Yeah.
They get embedded in your
head.
It's
like an earworm city.
Unbelievable, yeah. And the reason why we're playing this tonight is that these guys are from, of course, Leith in
Edinburgh.
That's right. And these series of shows are all about us touring in the UK in October.
Starlight and Campbell, Starlight One, UK tour.
And we're playing at Bannerman's in Edinburgh on Monday the 9th of October.
We are.
So we're doing a show tonight about Edinburgh. And, of course, you can't do Edinburgh without doing the Proclaimers and...
Of course,
various other artists that we're going to be talking about in a minute. Classic people.
This song, though, I didn't realise. I forgot it was featured in, you know, have you ever seen Benny and June with Johnny Depp?
No.
It's a really, really cool film. And that's why they re-released the song as a single and went to number 8 in the Billboard Modern Rock charts. And also, of course... we had Comic Relief. You know, remember Peter Kay and Matt Lucas?
I do.
And they re-recorded the song and then it went to number one in the charts. I remember that as well because obviously it was... Wasn't that the one when Peter Kay... No, that Amarillo is when he's walking down the corridor.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I see what you mean.
Another one. Yeah, that's right. It's unbelievable because they get stuck in your head.
These guys, they're great though, aren't they? I mean... They were into punk and everything, but they don't look like they looked like they lived in the library. They didn't really look as if they were like into these punk bands like the Clash and the Jam and the Sex Pistols when they were growing up, you know.
Is that right? Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought they were folkies probably.
Well, that's what I thought. But then when I start to look into their background, it says that they played in punk rock bands with a beaten up drum kit and guitar. And they loved the Clash and the Jam and also the mid-60s stuff like the Rolling Stones, the Beatles and the Kinks. And, do you know what, this is great. It's stories of community. You know when musicians, like, helped each other out in days gone past?
Yeah.
They recorded a demo album with the help of Kevin Rowland from Dex's Midnight Runners.
Is that right?
Yeah. I thought that was well cool. And then the House Martins, the indie band, heard the demo and the album, the demo album, and invited the guys on tour to support them in 1986.
Well, the House Martins, did you know that the drummer that played on the album, Little Brother album that was signed to Lime Records, i.e. Polydor, the drummer was originally in the House Martins.
No!
Yeah, from Hull, there we go. And this record was actually produced by the lovely Pete Wingfield. And on drums was Dave Mattox of Fairport Convention.
Right.
There we are. And Steve Shaw of Dex's Midnight Runners. So there you are. A bit of a thing going through
there. Keep it in the family. Mm. That's great. Well, I'll tell you what, doesn't that make you feel like it's like double joy in your heart when you know there's a lot of love and friendship involved in this band?
Absolutely.
Could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me. But heroes often fail, and you won't read that book again because the ending's just too hard to take. like a movie star gets burned in a three-way script. Enter number two, a movie queen to play the scene of bringing all the good things out in me. But for now, love, let's be real. I never thought I could act this way, and I've got to say that I just don't get it. I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone, and I just can't get it. Tale my thoughts could tell, just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, the stories always end. And if you read between the lines, you'll know that I'm just trying to understand the feelings that you lack. I never thought I could feel this way, and I've got to say that I just don't get it. I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone, and I just can't get it back.
Read My Mind, released as a single on the 2nd of May 2023 on Supertone Records. Written by Canada's national treasure and greatest songwriter Gordon Lightfoot, who sadly died a few weeks ago. And we recorded this, that's us of course, when we were doing our live streams during the last year, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
2022, between January and July, I think it was, or June. And when we were doing the sessions, we actually saw Gordon Lightfoot perform this very song and others at Canada Day. And he's on the steps, I think, of a town hall somewhere, acoustic guitar through a little Fender amp. And he looked so... his eyes were so bright and piercing, but he when he was singing, his voice was still beautiful, broken, but it just moved us to tears.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to actually record it, you know. So we did that, acoustic guitar and your filed King John bass.
Mighty bass, yeah.
Old mic'd up, a bit of noise on there, a bit of body noise you can hear, a bit of rustling
it's
occasionally.
It's real.
But it's real, yeah, of course it is, yeah. So, and, you know, that song, even when we listen to it now, it moves us to tears, and I think... you know, you did a fantastic harmony part to it, which I don't think anybody else has done before. And I just love that harmony, and I love singing it with you. It's just a beautiful thing, and to get that sort of dun do 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 on the it's quite tricky, you know. It's I won't say it's a tricky part. It's just but finger picking, you know. I'm a bit of a novice when it comes to doing acoustic guitar, really. And if I listen to it, it wasn't a bad job, that, for me.
Oh, no, very honestly, it makes me go really quiet, actually, when I hear that, because it just melts me a bit, really. It's such a beautiful song. I didn't realise, actually, that he cited his divorce for inspiring the lyrics, saying they came to him as he was sitting in an empty house in Toronto one summer. And it's been covered by loads of people, which I didn't know.
Of course.
So, of course, I mean, what a mighty song. So people have covered it, include Johnny Cash, Barbara Streisand, Olivia Newton-John, Neil Young, and Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass.
Exactly. Well, there you
wow.
are.
Wow. Now,
didn't Herb Albert own A&R Records? A&M, I should say. I think it was. Yeah, anyway, it was Herb Albert, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, I might be corrected by a flood of emails, but I think it was, anyway.
Okay. I just love the Tijuana bit because, yeah, of course, that's the Tijuana Christmas we have every year for my mum. But one legend, story has it, who didn't perform a Lightfoot song was Frank Sinatra.
Mm.
Apparently, he threw down the song sheets for If You Could Read My Mind in the studio, saying, I can't sing this, which Gordon thought was very funny. I've got to say, learning that song, though, is very hard. Mm. It's very, it's a really, the way it's written, the story, like the lyrics are there, but also the way it's not a traditional way of the structure of the song. It jumps about a bit, and it's like you've really, really got to think hard about the story and which verses. Oh, that's about the film star. And
it is.
It's a tricky one. It sounds easy, but it's not. It's not easy at all.
So
yeah,
the Gordon Lightfoot. absolutely remarkable artist. Anyway, so let's get on to...
Well, the thing is that we wanted to include the song in the show. There are some thoughts about the fact that they said that Gordon had some Scottish ancestry. But we think maybe his granddad just came from Manchester.
Is that right? Well, Manchester's very close to Edinburgh anyway, you know. So.
But he's got a really, really, really interesting story. And, you know, when we discover new people, as I say every week, you know, when you look at the origins of how people start off, it's an inspiration to me. So he quit his banking job for his first professional gig with the singing, swinging eight on the Canadian TV show Country Hoedown.
Blimey.
And which meant that he had to do a nightly square dance.
No.
Yeah. Can you imagine Gordon dancing?
Well, there you are.
I thought it was really
funny. Light in the foot, you
exactly.
see. There you go.
And then he soon became known at Toronto folk music orientated coffee houses. That was the era of the coffee house. Mm. And in 1961 released two singles, both recorded at RCA in Nashville, baby, and produced by Chet Atkins.
Atco.
And in 1963, he travelled in Europe and presented the BBC Country and Western show for a year. Now, I didn't know that Gordon was actually on BBC television for a year, but then I wasn't born then. So in his third studio album, Did She Mention My Name, featured Black Day in July, about the 1967 Detroit riot.
Mm.
And weeks later, after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. on the 4th of April, radio stations in about 30 states, they pulled the song for fanning the flames, even though the song was really about a plea for racial harmony. And Gordon stated at the time that radio station owners cared more about playing songs that make people happy and not those that make people think. So he was really unhappy at the lack of support from United Artists. So he defected to Warner Brothers Records and he scored his first major international hit in early 1971 with If You Could Read My Mind. So there's a story and a half, isn't it?
Sure is.
Can you see the bottom of the notes there?
No, I'm not.
Okay, it's a secret question. Now, he wrote a song, I'll Prove My Love, for his wife, in lieu of...
I don't know.
I'll Prove My Love. It was all about the fact that he couldn't wear a wedding ring because he used to catch on the E string on his guitar.
So is that right?
So he said that he would prove his love to her in other ways.
Standing sultry in the rain.
Orange Juice, Rip It Up. Released as the second single from their second album, Rip It Up, on the 7th of February 1983 on the Polydor record label. It went to number 8 in the UK charts and signified a departure from the sound of their earlier singles with chic-influenced guitars. And the first chart single to feature a Roland TB-303 synthesizer. So the bass line created a more disco-orientated sound.
Very annoying.
Really?
Well, when you've listened to it for about a minute, you're sick of it. It's actually a very penetrating sound, you know? And, you know, Edwin Collins, he's a great guy.
We love Edwin.
And he's had, you know, he's very, very poorly. He lives in Blackburn, I think, now.
Does he really?
Yeah, I think he does. He lives up there.
Oh, I thought he was born in Edinburgh.
He was certainly
born. That's why
he's
on the show.
And that's why he's on the show, yeah, and that's why this track is on the show. But there's two things about that. It's not really dated that well, and the guitar solo drives me absolutely bonkers every time I hear it. It's like that. Da-da-da. It's actually not right. It's out of tune. It's a semitone. It's the worst interval you can actually make. It's not a mistake. He's obviously done it on purpose, but it's very fucking irritating. Every time I hear it, I want you to kill Edwin Collins when I saw it on tape. And, you know, apparently, did he get banned off Top of the Pops because the bass player was so pissed he fell off stage?
He did.
Into the audience.
Well, they played Top of the Pops twice, and the bass player, David McClymont, he fell into the crowd, apparently inebriated, and they banned him off the show.
Yeah, well, there you go.
The group off the show. That's a bit punk for you, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, this, of course, this whole show is about Edinburgh and the artists from Edinburgh, because we are playing there at Bannerman's.
Yes, on Monday the 9th of October.
Yeah, so it's a funny day, but we're playing virtually every night over 2 weeks. So Monday is a key night in our agenda. And we're looking forward to playing Bannerman's. We did it last time with Gabriele Del Vecchio.
We did.
On keyboards, and we got a storming review from Ian Cameron,
wasn't
it?
Right. That's right, Blues Enthused.
He really gives a storming review. It was fantastic. But
it's really cool.
Yeah, and it's a crazy place, because it's like one of those clubs that everybody plays. It's, what, about 150, 200 capacity, something like that, standing. Smells of beer, you know, your feet stick to the floor, all that sort of carry on, you know. And it's a bit of a dive in the street outside, you know, you've got to be real careful because of the van and everything. You've got to park on the pavement. It's a nightmare loading. But anyway, we're going to be doing it with our drummer, Hugo Dannin. Yeah, so we're doing it as a three-piece with other stuff. So.
And we've got friends Paul Mundy, who's a chef who's up in Scotland, and Marzena Ostromaker, who's an artist that designs glass. We met her in Valencia in Spain.
That's right, yeah.
So we've got some friends up in Edinburgh, so yeah. Get your tickets. Come and see us at Bannerman's. It's going to be a right rocking night.
It will. It'll be good. But let's back to Orange Juice.
Yes.
Talk to me about jangle pop.
Well, this is the weirdest term ever, actually. So let's just talk about Edwin. He won an Ivor Novello Award for inspiration in 2009.
Not for guitar playing. Oh, anyway.
And they call the band a Scottish jangle pop band. Founded in the Glasgow suburb of Bearsden, first called the New Sonnets in 1976. Now, jangle pop is a subgenre of pop rock or college rock that emphasises jangly guitars and 1960s style pop melodies. And the term originated from Bob Dylan's song Mr. Tambourine Man, whose 1965 rendition by the Byrds became considered one of the genre's representative works. So since the 1960s, you've got jangle pop has crossed numerous genres, including power pop, psychedelia, new wave, post-punk, indie rock, and lo-fi. And so you've got 1980s examples of indie rock as jangle pop is R.E.M., The Wedding Present, and The Smiths, would you believe it?
The Wedding Present. Nick Cave, of course.
Well, of course. So it's interesting, and I really wanted to include that in the show because sometimes there are these definitions, and it's kind of interesting to sort of go down the rabbit hole with them and go, well, where did that come from then, and why are you calling that that?
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about the guitar. Of course, that sax solo hasn't lasted very well either, because it's like the classic 80s sax solo. But let's not worry about the sax solo. Let's talk about the Mutron biphase pedal, which is far more interesting.
Where's that come from?
Malcolm
space?
Ross, who's the main guitar part, was played using this very device. And it says that it's more like an ARP synth. Of course, it's nothing like an ARP synth, with patch cards that were placed on top of the controls to get preset sounds, which was absolutely correct. I never owned one. I saw them. They were very, very expensive. I used to have an MXR Phase 100, which was very, very cool at the time. And a keyboard player stole it off me.
No.
Yeah, it was a keyboard player I was working with at the time, and he said, oh, I'm going to borrow it. He said, I'll bring it next time. And, of course, there was never a next time.
What a bounder.
No, there we are. It was a bounder. There we are.
A cad.
So, but that bareface pedal sounds fantastic. We like that. And the fact that it was delayed a 16th of a second onto the other side, so it's like a really nice guitar part. I like that.
I like that too. And Malcolm Ross went on to play with Aztec Camera.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Great band, that. Now, they are a great band, Aztec. They are those Aztecos.
Now, this is a great piece of information.
Okay.
You know those water droplet noises in the track?
I do.
Do you know how they were created?
No.
Edwin tapped his jack plug that was into his amp on a metal doorstop on the studio floor, which was then flanged.
1, 2, 3, 4. Ooh. Knows it better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let it do all the talking. Ooh-hoo. I came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. I felt a little fear upon my back. I said, don't look back, just keep on walking. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. When the big black horse said, look this way, he said, hey, but I said no, 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 no. I said no, no, you're not the one for me. No, 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 no. I said no, no, you're not the one for me. Ooh. And my heart hit a problem in the early hours, so I stopped it dead for a beat or two. Ooh. But I cut some cord and I shouldn't have done it, and it won't forgive me after all these years. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. So I sent it to a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. Now I won't come back cause it's all so happy, and now I got a hole for the world to see. Ooh-hoo. Yeah. Ooh-hoo. And it said no. Not the one for me. No, 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 no. Say no, no. You're not the one for me. Ooh. For me, big black holes on a cherry tree. I can't quite get that cause my heart forsaken me. Yeah.
K.T. Tunstall, Black Horse and the Cherry Tree, released as a single on the 21st of February 2005 on the Relentless, great name, record label in the UK and Virgin Records in the USA. The song featured her on her baby studio album, Eye to a Telescope, which was released 9 weeks earlier. Now,
what?
I think this song is fantastic. I don't like the production when it goes into the it stinks the when it goes into the like the chorus bit, it all falls to pieces. But the beginning of it's fantastic, and I just love it. But the reason why I think it's fantastic is that I saw her performing it live on Later with Jules Holland.
You didn't that I, performance?
I did. I saw it at the time. Of course, I wasn't in the studio, but I watched it on TV, and it was the first time I'd ever seen somebody use a looper. And she was looping the whole thing. And I freaked out. I thought, what's this? I like, look at this. What's happening? I've never used a looper, actually, but it was cool. And she had it all going, you know. She got the kick drum, go, do, 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 and she sang into it.
Yeah.
And then it started looping at the background, you know. It really, really cool. And she was fantastic, very charismatic, great voice, you know. And, of course, from Edinburgh, the reason why she's on the show.
Yeah, well, that was an Akai E2 Headrush loop pedal, which he affectionately calls Wee Bastard. Which I thought was quite sweet.
Well, we had a load of Akai stuff back in the day, you know, talking about Little Brother earlier on. And, oh dear, the samplers. And we had this Akai sequencer. In fact, we had two. We had one in an orange box and one in a black box, and it was known as a highly important box because without it, the gig could not carry on because we used to do a lot of sequencer stuff, you know, Steve Dowd. We had these two things, and it was amazing. I can't remember the model number of it. Anyway, that's a different story. Back to KT.
No, I think it's great. It's technology. I mean, for our Starlight One UK tour, going to be embracing some technology, darling.
Well, yes, we are going to be embracing it, and I'm absolutely terrified because it's the first time since about 1992 that I'll have worked with anything, with loops or anything like that. So we're running it. We're going to run quite a lot of stuff, sequences, synths and all that sort of stuff from a laptop.
Yeah, because we've been recording with analog synths, Prophet 5.
Yeah, Prophet 5, Moog, Waldorf STVCs.
It's a great sonic soundscape, actually. And obviously, it's still melodic. It's still proper songs and things. And it's got great bass riffs. And the drums are amazing. And the guitar, I mean, and the melodies and the double harmonies. It's definitely a Starlight & Campbell. It's just, we've got a new album.
That's right. And we're playing everything. So we can't actually do it live unless we actually use some electronic stuff. But if you come to see us, hopefully at Bannerman's, because the shows about Edinburgh are on the UK tour. You can check it out at https://starlight-campbell.com.
Yeah, and that's it. Starlight. That's Monday the 9th of October. We'll be in Edinburgh. And I really like Katie Tunstall. I think she's, in fact, she was involved with the Hotel Cafe lot as well at some point. I think she was on the tour because I managed to catch those guys a couple of times just because I like the way there's a camaraderie. For me, music is about the community as well. I think it's a really good thing with live gigs that it connects you into the community and connects you to each other. And it's like a matchmaker. I love music for that. And Katie, when I was looking into her backstory, she was born to a half Chinese, half Scottish mother, Carol Ann, who's from Hong Kong. And she has an Irish father.
Blimey.
And she derived her name Katie from K-T Impact, the name of a geological event that caused the extinction of the dinosaurs.
Blimey.
I know, it's deep, isn't it? It's cool. And she was christened Kate, and she said, "It just made me think of a buxom lass baking bread for a man working in the fields. I've no problem with that, but it's just not really how I pictured being a rock star." And her parents met while her mother was working as a dancer in a penthouse bar in Edinburgh, where her father was a bartender. And she never met her biological father. And 18 days old, she was placed for adoption by her mother with a family in St Andrews in Fife in Scotland.
Well, blimey.
I know. So, so she's in around 2014. Oh, yeah, let's talk about the Jules Holland show, because actually, before this bit, what happened was that she got a slot on the Jules, Jules, and it broke her. And you just said it all.
It would
because
be. She was amazing.
She, that performance, yeah. So basically her career took off, and around 2014 she left Edinburgh and moved to LA and began a new career as a soundtrack composer studying at the Skywalker Ranch.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And we know a few people who know Katie, and she's everyone just says that she's really cool, really down to earth, and she does a lot for charity, and she's a kick-ass woman. The Waterboys, The Hole of the Moon. Released as a single from their third studio album, This is the Sea, on the 14th of October 1985. Written and produced by lead singer and founder Mike Scott.
Mike Scott.
Recorded at Livingston, London, and Amazon, Liverpool, and won the Ivor Novello Award for Best Song Musically and Lyrically in 1991. It was re-released and reached number three in the UK charts. There you go.
Great song. Really great song. You know, it always makes me happy, that. And it always gives me a little tinge of sadness because it was one of the favourite songs of my mate Martin Rushworth, who died. I used to go running with him. I used to do a lot of running when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. You know, to keep fit and in the band and trying to rock out, you know, and live thin. So we used to go running all the time, and he died of cancer. He had prostate cancer, so very, very sad. He died, I think he was 32 when he died. But the
I know.
And the thing is that when I always think about it, I always think about him looking like he did when he was 32, you know. He was a bit of a lad. He was a teacher, you know. Really, really cool guy. But this was one of his favourite songs anyway. So
it's funny, isn't it, how music does that? It can capture a moment in time and have that sort of extra meaning to you because it's been part of the soundtrack to your life, hasn't it, really?
Yeah. And Mike Scott produced it, didn't he?
And Mike Scott, yeah, he did. And the reason why we're playing the Waterboys is because Mike Scott was born and raised in Edinburgh.
Ah.
And we're playing Edinburgh with the Starlight and Campbell UK tour on Monday the 9th of October in Bannerman's.
We are indeed.
So,
And the thing is with Edinburgh, you know, when you actually look at the number of bands, there's not an awful lot of bands, like, really. Because we were digging around trying to find some, like, relatively big names, and it's pretty tricky, really, with Edinburgh. For some reason, Glasgow, there's hundreds of them.
I know.
But Edinburgh, it's very strange. It's always very genteel, Edinburgh, though. I always think they're very genteel place, and I expect more writers to come from Edinburgh and sort of fine artists and stuff.
Well, it's odd, you know, because when I was studying at Salford, when we did the medium performance course, we ran a venue in Edinburgh for the festival for 2 weeks, and it's a completely different space. The city just comes alive, and it's just an absolute glorious experience. And then if you go back up in between then and Hogmanay, it's really quiet. Really, really quiet. Mm. It's like almost like the Isle of Man with the TT. It comes, you know, it buzzes with 80. You know, when you get like thousands of people flocking onto the island for a couple of weeks, it's the same there. But one of his earlier bands with Mike Scott was called Another Pretty Face, and it actually achieved quite a lot of success with their first single, All the Boys Love Carrie, and That's Not Enough, because NME named it Single of the Week.
Very powerful in those days.
Yeah, they were. The band signed a contract with Virgin and were featured on the front cover of Sounds magazine, and they toured with Stiff Little Fingers.
Blimey.
And then, but sadly, 4 months later, Virgin dropped them from their contract after they heard the demo tape. Happens.
It does.
They recorded a John Peel session in 1981 and was signed by Nigel Grange, founder of Enzyme Records, brother of Lucian Grange.
Of Universal Music.
Yeah.
A lot of people say he's the worst thing that's ever happened to the music business. I don't know. I don't know the guy, you know, but he does seem to have he's gone up the ladder of success, and he seemed to have stepped on a lot of fingers on the way up. But
again, didn't he hold back Robert Palmer's album for ages and stuff?
There's lots of horror stories about it.
Anyway, so Mike Scott. In a way, it's interesting because I think Mike's always thought that the Waterboys and all his bands are his project. That's basically what it, in a nutshell, because he then changed the band name to Funhouse, but he wasn't happy and started working on solo stuff. And he said that that band at the time sounded similar to a jumbo jet flying on one engine.
Wow.
So I think he has a very clear creative vision, and I think he wants it the way he wants it. And that's Mike Scott, and that's what he does.
Well, it reminds me very much of Mark E. Smith.
Well,
who said that if it's
true.
Me and your granny on bongos, it's the Fall.
There are places I'll remember all my life. Though some have changed. Some forever, not for better. Some have gone, and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are dead, and some are living. In my life, I've loved them all. But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one compares with you. And these memories lose their meaning when I think of love as something new. Though I know I'll never lose affection for people and things that went before. I know I'll often stop and think about them. In my life, I'll love you more. In my life, I'll love you more.
Sean Connery, In My Life, the title track from the covers and compilation album produced by Sir George Martin and released on the 20th of October 1998 on MCA and the Echo record label. It features musicians like Celine Dion, Phil Collins, Bobby McFerrin, alongside actors Robin Williams, Sean Connery, of course, Billy Connolly, Goldie Hawn and Jim Carrey. And Jeff Beck's also on that album, and his version of A Day in the Life was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Pop Instrumental Performance in 2000. And I think he performed it at the Ronnie Scott's gig, if you remember, as well. And it's a remarkable version, of course. We did a show earlier on this year when he sadly died, old Jeff. And there was a concert, and was it last night?
Yeah,
the night before?
I actually saw some guys that we know on Facebook were at the Royal Albert Hall, and they posted some footage up. So we got Rod Stewart. Who else did we have on there?
Oh, there's loads of everybody who's
Ronnie,
anybody. Yeah, everybody's on
Eric
there.
Eric Clapton was there.
Of course. Yeah.
Derek Trucks.
Yeah. Twooks.
Doyle Bramall.
Yeah.
Just loads of people. It was.
Well, I mean, you know, he's probably
intense.
One of the greatest rock and roll guitar players that's ever been born, you know?
I know.
I mean,
I still can't believe he's not with us, actually.
No,
it's a bit weird, isn't it?
Anyway, we're on about Sean Connery here, who did the vocal performance on there. And if you live in Portugal, you've got to do an accent like Sean Connery, then people can understand you, because
true.
All the S's are at sh. They're all S-H's.
Yes.
So if you say an S in Portuguese, it's S-H always.
Shh.
So anyway, he was the first act to portray secret agent 007 in James Bond films, appearing in seven films between 62 and 83.
I know. And who's your favourite Bond?
Him.
Yeah.
I mean, Daniel Craig, actually. He's a close second, Daniel Craig, because I think he's reimagined the role, and I think he did a great job of it. But it's always Sean Connery. Those original films, you know, Dr. No and Goldfinger, I mean, my goodness, with old Bassey pumping it out, you know, Goldfinger. Fantastic song, you know. And the whole thing, the Aston Martins. I mean, just remarkable, you know.
Well, you know what was weird? I was reading about that as well. It's like that when he got the part and stuff, he was taken under the wing by one of the producers, and they kind of showed him how to sort of walk the right way and eat the right way, you know, and just have all that sort of suave sophistication that James Bond has.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he really did a lot of research to sort of become the character. And what was interesting, the reason why he's on the show, Thomas Connery was born at the Royal Maternity Hospital in Edinburgh.
Of course.
On the 25th of August in 1930, and he was brought up, this sounds like a bit like Harry Potter, at number 176 Fountain Bridge. His mother, Euphemia McBain Effie McLean, I know, was a Protestant and worked as a cleaning woman. And his father, Joseph Connery, was a Catholic and worked in factories and as a lorry driver.
Blimey.
So, in age 16, in 1946, Sean joined the Royal Navy and trained in Portsmouth, but was discharged by the time he was 19 because he had a duodenal ulcer.
Blimey.
So then he worked loads of different jobs as a lifeguard at Portobello Swimming Baths, a labourer and an artist model for the Edinburgh College of Art, which earned him 15 shillings an hour. He was described at the time as being very straight, slightly shy and too beautiful for words, a virtual Adonis, which I thought was brilliant. And did you know this, that he used to be a bodybuilder?
No.
Yeah, and he started training at the age of 18 with this guy called Ellington, who was a former gym instructor in the British Army, and he took part in the Mr. Universe competition.
Wow.
See, the thing is, I think what happened is that he's a really good-looking guy.
Yeah.
And good-looking guys, if you've got the skill for acting, do very well indeed. And while he was on tour in the South Pacific, and this is the other thing, he used to love football. And when he was on tour in the South Pacific, Matt Busby scouted him from Man United and was impressed with his physical prowess and offered him 25 quid a week to join Man U. And he said, I realised that a top-class footballer could be over the hill by the age of 30, and he was already 23 at the time, so he decided to become an actor. And it turned out to be one of his more intelligent moves. So to supplement his income, he used to help out backstage at the King's Theatre, and he ended up in a production of South Pacific.
Wow.
And then through meeting people, and it was a tough old time for him, you know. He had to babysit for the producer, and then he just got cast and cast and cast. And you should read the stories. I mean, it's too thick. It's too much. He just did loads and loads and loads before he got his break for 007. James. Well,
Bond.
James Bond.
Well, I think the thing is, this George Martin album, you know, I haven't heard it because it's not available stream, which is great.
Yeah.
So we had to dig it out. You know, really fantastic.
I used to have it years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's some great performances on there. But this, you know, it can only be Sean Connery who can say that, you know, and it's just a remarkable performance. And the string arrangements are just divine, you know. You know, George Martin, another one. Both of them, very sadly missed.
Yeah, I know. Do you know it's the end of the show as well?
No!
It's gone really quick this week.
It has.
Edinburgh, quick.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play it with the Rizzullos, one of our favourite albums.
Or you love them, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Top of the Pops from the debut studio album, Can't Stand the Rizzullos. It's a great, punchy track. Very un-Edinburgh, I think. But, of course, this show's all been about Edinburgh. And don't forget, you can get the podcast on vibes.starlight-campbell.com.